Boy, has it been a busy few weeks. I've been out of town twice since my last podcast, and that includes today's venture on the wine road. I'm Jeff Davis. This week's podcast is going to be quite a bit different than my usual offering. A few weeks ago, public relations maven Gene Sullivan posed this idea to me. How'd you like to head down to Saratoga in San Francisco's South Bay, visit some wineries, the Hakone Japanese Estate Gardens, one or two other points of interest, and enjoy some wonderful dining? Well, how could I turn down that offer? So, on the long MLK weekend, my wife and I traveled on the wine road down to Saratoga. Our somewhat loose itinerary, other than Hakone, included visiting Cooper Garrett Estate Vineyard and Garrett Farms Horse Ranch. We experienced Ridge Vineyard's iconic Montebello Estate, and you'll hear some audio from that visit. And I'll share with you a couple of other stops we made that weekend. So if you want to consider a new adventure that may not have been on your radar, stick around for the next 35 minutes. Since my wife was with me every step of the way, I invited her to join me on today's podcast. Hello, Meredith.
Hi, Jeff.
Okay, that's all you get. No, there's much more to come. Before we go any further, I should point out that Meredith is in the wine business. She works at Gloria Ferrer Caves and Vineyards in the town of Sonoma. So she knows a thing or two or three about the wine business and certainly travel. So she'll be a worthy co-host for today's show. So Meredith, I would normally start by asking you, what was your favorite experience? But man, everything was so enjoyable and so distinctive. I don't think it would be fair to pick one as a favorite.
Yes, every experience was different and unique. We enjoyed everything.
Well, I'll start this venture where we did, checking into the Saratoga Oaks Lodge. We were provided with one of the suites they have on the property, and I liked the layout, and the staff couldn't have been more hospitable. It's a family-owned boutique lodge, and they offer a quiet escape. And I liked the way they lit those two huge oak trees on the property. It was beautiful at night.
It was beautiful at night, and actually the room was beautiful as well. Coming in, they had a fireplace, some suites for us, a king-size bed.
That's right. They had the fireplace going, didn't they?
They did. It was warm, but liked the ambiance.
She mentioned sweets. They offered a crafted tray of pastries from Can Do Patisserie. That was a fantastic, unexpected surprise. Big props to the Saratoga Oaks Lodge and Can Do Patisserie. We can't thank them enough for putting us up for two nights.
They were absolutely wonderful. They had a nice breakfast in the morning, very easygoing. They were very helpful, were willing to point us in any direction that we wanted to, let us know all the different tasting rooms in downtown Saratoga.
And there's someone on site 24/7, which, when necessary, can be helpful. Right after checking in, we went over to the Hakone Estate and Japanese Gardens. It's one of the oldest in the Western Hemisphere. There we met up with Shozo Kagashima, the executive director, and he was full of historical information about the gardens and the many structures on the property. Meredith is quite the photographer, and the setting kept you busy with its many Japanese designs, sculptures, and fauna.
That's what I loved about it, is it was, even though it was the dead of winter, there wasn't a whole lot of flowering going on, but there was still a lot of interesting architecture, beautiful waterfall, beautiful areas to photograph, and you could also see a little glimpse of Japanese culture in every single corner.
That's right. They had the tea room, and they had just finished doing a tea, so you saw the women dressed up in their kimonos, and I don't even know if they spoke English.
I think some of them do and some of them don't, but they did have some beautiful kimonos. As you mentioned, it was a tea ceremony that they had just finished up. I would have loved to have photographed that. Certainly took me back to my trip to Japan 3 years ago.
Right. While I was talking with Shozo, Meredith was off taking all kinds of cool shots with her camera. Many of those you can see on my website now, onthewineroad.com. And during my interview with Shozo, you'll hear some background noise. Those are two different waterfalls that were nearby. I said to him, you know, in Northern California wine country, we have the beautiful vineyards, majestic wineries. It's always a sight to see. But boy, you have a gorgeous spot here that you get to enjoy every day.
Yes, it is, Jeff. And thank you for coming out. And we're glad to have you here. Every morning when I come to work, it's just so peaceful and tranquil that it's very soothing and comforting. I just love coming to work every day.
How much stress here is there?
Not much stress. So it really is an ideal job.
Yeah, and on that topic, an additional aspect of Hakone Japanese Gardens is you offer classes here that can lower one's stress.
Exactly. Part of our cultural experience is, you know, we have Tai Chi classes, we have meditation classes on the weekends, tea ceremony classes. So there's a lot of different things, and they're all meant to reduce stress.
What an interesting story it is of how these gardens began with Oliver and Isabel Stein back in 1915. She fell in love with Eastern concepts and the beauty of Japanese gardens, and that inspired her to create this magnificent setting.
Exactly. Mrs. Stein, after she and her husband visited the Panama Pacific Exposition in San Francisco, they visited the Japan Pavilion and just fell in love with Japan and its culture. And so they decided that they wanted to build their own Japanese garden estate, and they purchased the property here in Saratoga and started the construction in 1916 after visiting Japan. And today you have an authentic Japanese estate garden.
And she was fortunate enough to get some of the remnants of the exposition when they closed it down. She acquired some of the material that was in the exposition for the gardens.
Yes, that's correct. It said that she picked up a gate and a couple of plants from the exposition. And a majority of the buildings went to the Japanese tea garden in San Francisco. But she was able to pick up a few items for her own personal garden here.
And she chose the name after visiting Japan. She saw the some gardens there.
That's correct. While she and her son were traveling through Japan just to get their ideas, they visited the Fuji Hakone National Park in Japan, and she fell in love with the garden there, and that's what really drove her to build the gardens here in Saratoga after, and she decided to name it after Hakone as well.
And this was the Stein's retreat from the city, I understand. It wasn't originally a public park for quite some time.
That's correct. The Steins, they were major socialites in San Francisco. Oliver Stein was a developer, a well-known developer in San Francisco. And so they used Hakone as a retreat, summer weekend retreat to come away and relieve stress again because it was a nice, peaceful environment. And unfortunately, Oliver Stein was only able to enjoy it for about a year. He passed away in 1918.
But, I saw that.
But Isabel was here from up until 1932, and she would host lavish parties here. She actually hosted the West Coast opening of Madame Butterfly here on the estate.
I read that, and what a great idea for the city socialite to offer fans of the opera. I read that over the years, a few Japanese gardeners, designers, and architects had a hand in designing, constructing, and maintaining these gardens.
So the original designer, landscape designer, and architect were from Japan. And in 1932, when the property was sold to Major Charles Lee Tilden, he hired a Japanese gardener who really wasn't trained in formal Japanese gardening. But he learned on the job, and he remained on the gardens until 1960 when the property was sold. With the exception of the war period, in World War II, when he and his family were sent to Utah for internment camp.
I guess Charles Tilden has quite a reputation for saving thousands of acres here in the East Bay for public use, and so he was a perfect steward for this property.
Yes, and Tilden Park in Oakland is named after him because he was a conservationist, and you know he wanted to make sure that Hakone was maintained the way it was meant to be, and so for the 30-plus years that he and his family owned it, they made sure that the gardens were maintained to the highest standards.
It didn't become a public park until 1966, so it was privately owned for such a long time.
That's correct. For the first 50 years, the garden was privately owned. There were three different ownership groups. After the Steins, it was owned by Major Tilden, and then he sold it to a group of local investors, six different couples, who owned it from 1960 to 66. They found that they could not continue to maintain the property at the level that it needed to be, and they didn't want to see the gardens torn down and developed for residential or commercial purposes. So they approached the city of Saratoga and proposed that the city purchase it from them. And so the city decided that that would be a great idea. And so they purchased it in 1966 and made it part of their park system. And so for the last 50 years, it's been a part of the Saratoga City Parks.
a good move for sure.
It has been, and you know, they've made sure that the gardens are maintained and that the public can continue to enjoy the beauty.
And now it's part of the National Trust for Historic Preservation and is on the list of the U.S. National Registry of Historic Places, which really isn't much of a surprise.
No, the garden, you know, we celebrated the 100th anniversary back in 19... Well, we started in 2015 because that's when the inception, the idea for Hakone came about. And the next 3 years, we celebrated the centennial. And part of that is we, you know, it is on the National Register of Historic Places. It's not a historic building, but it's actually a historic district because it encompasses the buildings and the gardens as well.
And a beautiful place, and you're open to having weddings here and other celebrations.
Yes, the gardens are open every day except for Christmas and New Year's, and we also host a lot of weddings, business meetings, retreats, receptions, other family events, showers, and birthday parties and such.
Yeah. And your cherry blossom event sounds just gorgeous.
The cherry blossoms, yeah. So, the blossoms, we really get busy on the weekends during cherry blossom season. Everybody wants to see the blossoms. And so what we wanted to do is kind of spread the attendance out a little bit and by offering night viewings. And we light up, this past year we started by lighting up the cherry trees along the driveway and in the gardens. And we opened up the gardens for night viewings, and it was a very popular event.
I bet. Walking around here through the gardens, and that driveway is quite long, so I can't imagine the magnificence of driving up through lit-up cherry trees.
That's the first impression everybody gets, and when they come up and see the lights, they are in awe. And then they come into the gardens, and they can see the gardens lit up as well. It's not the entire gardens that are lit up, just the cherry trees, but there's enough lights on the trees that really makes the gardens something special.
And I imagine our listeners can hear the waterfall to the right of us, and there's a smaller one to the left, and we're standing here by the koi pond. It's a beautiful setting.
Right. So the waterfall and the pond really is the major feature of this garden. It's a hill and pond style Japanese garden, and so it has a traditional waterfall which comes down into the pond where we have a nice collection of koi. The garden's been here for 100 years, and we hope to see the garden here for another. And actually, we do have a master plan that's been approved by the City of Saratoga and the Board of Trustees for the foundation.
But the buildings are holding up very nicely, aren't they?
They
are.
Considering
the age.
Considering they're 100 years old, yeah, it's, it's the traditional. There's no nails used in it, so mortise and tenon construction. So it's very solid.
Well, you mentioned people being in awe, and I think I'm in awe of your position here. The Hakone Japanese Gardens. What a great place to work.
It is. It's just to be able to come here every day. You hear the birds chirping, you hear the waterfall, but it is a nice, beautiful, tranquil garden.
Thank you again for your time.
You're welcome. Thanks for visiting.
When he was talking about the Cherry Blossom Festival and how they light the trees, it seems so appealing. We've got to go back down there and see that.
Especially because he mentioned that a lot of the trees lining the very steep and winding driveway up to the gardens mm-hmm. was all full of cherry trees, and was pointing out a lot of the cherry trees that were on the property. Again, it was January, so it was not a whole lot of foliage on the trees, but just seeing how many they are and knowing how absolutely gorgeous cherry blossoms are and when they're in full bloom, I think would be magical.
He said it was in March, right? Early to mid-March, or sometimes as late as late March?
It should be late March, early April.
Of course, the weather plays a role, too. You can get details and see some images of Hakone Estate Gardens at hakone.com. HAKONE.com. After our visit there, we headed over to San Jose to Sino Japanese Restaurant. We seemed to have a bit of a theme going that day, didn't we? The Japanese. I didn't even realize it at the time. While we were there, we ordered dim sum, and it was the first time for you eating dim sum, wasn't it?
It was. I've always heard of it, but I've never actually experienced it. I'm sorry to say, I must be too sheltered.
Just didn't go to the right cities at the right time,
apparently.
We kind of went dim sum crazy. We ordered like 5 different styles.
Yes, and even the little steam pork buns that I've always seen on TV and people talk about, but I've never actually had. I tried them. A little chewy, but still delicious.
It was a big restaurant and a nightclub, too. And the plaza it's in, Santana Row, is really cool.
It is. It's a great pedestrian area right there in San Jose. I didn't realize how many restaurants and shops and even just unique little places to wander around. And you could spend days probably exploring out there.
Certainly hours, yeah. Free garage parking, too. Gotta love that.
Definitely have to love that.
Yeah. After that, right across the street is the Winchester Mystery House. Now that was something. It's one of those places you think about going to, but it's not something you necessarily plan on. But ultimately, I thought it was well worth seeing.
The funniest thing I thought was when we pulled into the parking lot and we noticed that there was no parking spaces. And we're like, is it really that popular? Is this place really that popular at 3 o'clock in the afternoon that all the parking places are taken? So we did go to the overflow lot where we found parking. But I thought it was funny that we were both thinking, wow, we didn't know it was that popular until you walk in.
And the other question is the house really that big? And it is.
It definitely is. Yeah. And they do have out front telling you it's got something like 10,000 windows and numerous staircases and all the little fun facts about that house.
Yeah, I don't know if you listeners know the story, but there was a mostly make-believe movie about the house last year, but Sarah Lockwood Pardee Winchester was the widow of William Winchester, whose family created the first repeating rifle, the rifle that won the West. They made gobs of money, but sadly, Sarah and William's infant daughter died just weeks after birth. Then Sarah's husband died of tuberculosis a few short years later. So that kind of threw her into a spin mentally.
Yes, I believe that she was living out east. That's mm-hmm. where the family lived. And she decided to move to California and to San Jose because of her psychic.
Yeah, she moved there in 1886. At that time, she purchased an 8-room farmhouse and continued expanding the house until her death. So apparently the question is, what did the psychic tell her? There's speculation that if she kept building the house, it would keep spirits away. And some of the spirits she was afraid of were those who were killed with the Winchester gun.
That is the rumors mm-hmm. of it. They certainly couldn't corroborate any of that, but that is the rumor that it was the spirits from those who had died from gunfire from the Winchester rifle that were trying to come and harm Sarah.
There's also speculation that she thought if she continued to build stairways to nowhere, doors in front of walls, and other crazy features, it would confuse any spirits and keep them away.
It confused humans as well.
It certainly was interesting. Here are some facts. It's 24,000 square feet, has 10,000 windows, 2,000 doors, 160 rooms, 52 skylights. Those were pretty cool.
They were. Yeah. They definitely let the light in.
47 stairways and fireplaces, 17 chimneys, 13 bathrooms, and the number 13 is predominant throughout the house.
She liked the number 13.
6 kitchens, and she spent $5 million at the time during her lifetime building, working on the house, which today would be $71 million.
Well, they were saying that she was earning $1,000 a day just from the family business that continued to thrive.
Right. And to her credit, she paid her staff, or at least some of her favorite staff, quite well.
Yes, I believe all the people that worked for her, she paid them more than the going rate because she wanted to keep them there and keep them happy and productive. And of course, you know, she had a lot of carpenters on her payroll.
Yeah, and some were there the entire time. She was there mm-hmm. from 86 to 1922 when she died. And she kept building until she died.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So again, it's well worth a trip. You got some really nice photos in there too.
I really enjoyed it. The thing I found most interesting of the house is it was damaged quite extensively in the 1906 earthquake. Mm-hmm. They did purposely leave some rooms that showed the damage. It's interesting when you take the tour that they have some audio portions, I guess you would call it, for during the tour.
To give you a sense of what the earthquake felt and sounded like.
Yes, and just being able to look around at the damage. But there were a lot of rooms that are still down to the studs. Still to this day. And I did ask if they were planning on renovating any of those rooms because I'm sure there was at least drywall or something on them at some point. And I don't believe that there is.
When she died, they just stopped working. They left. A lot of people were hired to work there. So if you thought about going to the Winchester Mystery House, we give it a big thumbs up. And also, a big thank you goes out to Francis Wong of Visit San Jose for setting us up with lunch at Sino and the Winchester Mystery House. Sunday morning, we woke up to off and on rain, had some breakfast, then went on to Cooper Garrett Estate Vineyards, which includes Garrett Farms, which has horse stables. And what an interesting rustic combination of two destinations in one spot. Owners Bill and Doris Cooper couldn't have been nicer people.
They were absolutely lovely. Doris met us when we first got there, and we were a little concerned whether the rain was going to stop our horseback ride or not, because it was a very rainy morning, but the gods definitely shined upon us on that.
That's right. It was a bit muddy, and we were happy she and the horses were willing to allow us to go horseback riding.
I think the horses, I was surprised to learn that they actually turn the horses out at night, so they are up in the hills, so they're already wandering around up in the mud and the grassy areas. So the horses didn't mind at all going back up there. They knew what to expect. Mm-hmm.
And those hills, the Cooper Garrett Vineyards and Farm, back up against the Mid-Peninsula Open Space Preserves, and that's where the trail took us. Beautiful.
Yes, and it was surprising to see how many people were also out there. A lot of hikers, people just with their dogs and doing just mm-hmm. solo hikes around, enjoying the great outdoors.
And we went to a couple of peaks and got to look out all over the South Bay.
Maisie Peak, which apparently is one of the highest points in that area, and it looks completely over the South Bay. You could see all the way across. You could see the bay. You could see the Apple spaceship. You could see every little landmark across the South Bay. It was really a beautiful sight.
Yeah. And what a history with their families. The Garrett family purchased 66 acres of the Mount Eden Orchard and Vineyard Company back in 1893. And the family at that time produced dried apricots and prunes. But as the orchards aged, they were replaced by an equestrian center. Even back then, they boarded privately owned horses, and as well as horses for trail riding and lessons for the public. Eventually, vineyards were added, and that same farm and grape growing, now winemaking, continues to this day. So after the horseback ride, we got down and met Bill Cooper, who is the winemaker at Cooper Garrett. And Bill loves to talk about grape growing and winemaking, and if you're not well-versed on the subjects of either, you'll learn a lot from him. And here's how he started off.
I'd like to start with a little bit of education. High level, four basic steps to winemaking that we have to do. How we do them are stylistic decisions. What are the four steps?
The fruit.
Grapes. Grow grapes. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, ferment.
Ferment is number two. Thank you.
Age.
Aging is third.
Bottling.
Bottling is fourth. Okay. So we've got that behind us. That's good. Now.
Yes, at least we know that much.
Yeah, well, that's good. No, but this is how we do this. Now, we're going to take a walk out to the vineyard and sort of talk about some of the things that are happening out there.
At that time, I don't think he realized that, Meredith, you work in the wine industry. He knew I had a radio show, but also didn't know that we lived in Sonoma as well. So he was trying to educate us about grapes and winemaking, but we pretty much had all the answers to his winemaking quiz that he enjoys doing.
Yes, but I encourage your listeners, I know they're getting educated listening to your show, but if you really want to kind of dive deep down into what are the elements of a label and what is fermentation and some of those real...
The details that you don't consider when you're enjoying a bottle of wine.
Right. He loves to talk about that, and they do what is called a walk with the winemaker. I believe it's the first Saturday of every month, and that was essentially what he was taking us on, is... as he would take anybody else out on this walk with the winemaker.
Right, and we also pretty much enjoyed the perfect date, which they call it. It is horseback riding, wine tasting, and lunch. It's a package.
It is a perfect date, especially if you love horseback riding like we do. And just being up on the hills on the horses and then being able to relax, tasting through their wines. They do some really beautiful white wines and reds, which incidentally was one of the answers to his question of what are the kinds of wine.
Oh, don't give away the answers.
Oh. But I had to remind him there's actually three kinds of wine if you look at it, red, white, and sparkling.
I think that's when he found out you work at Gloria Ferrer. Right. We really enjoyed their wine, actually. And you know, when you go to a small rustic winery operation, you don't know what you're going to get. But we really like their wines. Came home with four bottles of their wine.
And they have a great story about their labels.
Yeah, the image on their Cooper Garrett brand is an historic image of the view from their property toward the South Bay with some flowering trees in the foreground. And they also have a brand called Test Pilot. His father was a test pilot after World War II, and his father was the one who started the winery later in life. But he had a storied career as a test pilot. He flew over 100 different planes over the several decades. So yeah, Bill tells a great story about his father's test pilot era. So as an homage to his father, he has a red and a white blend that he calls Test Pilot. Each label represents one of the planes he flew. As a matter of fact, we bought the red 2013 F-86 Sabrejet Test Pilot, which was a Cabernet, Merlot, and Cab Franc blend.
And they have a lot of interesting family mementos and photos up on the walls of their tasting room. Their tasting room is built in an old barn, so it's very rustic, very much goes along with the feeling of the winery there with the horses and everything. And it's just fun to see this family's history.
While we ate, I went ahead and let my microphone record while we were sitting there at the table. You'll hear some noise as we enjoyed our lunch. And I wanted to include this because you'll really get a sense of how much they love the area there in Saratoga and welcoming people to their winery and horse stables.
People come down to enjoy a weekend in Saratoga. Mm-hmm. Can come out here and enjoy the horseback riding, music on Sundays, all these things that make it fun.
We're enjoying it.
The tapestry of Saratoga is just amazingly wonderful.
Yeah, I've been hearing a lot of different languages.
Yes.
As you walk around and even just hear.
Even earlier here today, you bet. And it means that we have Diwali celebrations downtown. We do holiday lighting that includes all of the faiths in the Blaney Plaza downtown. Mm-hmm. We end up with a classic car show in July. They close off Highway 9, Big Basin Way, and the cars that come for this show are absolutely amazing. We've been able to choose the Vintage Car Award the last several years.
Oh, nice.
And it becomes harder every year because that's gaining traction and mm-hmm. publicity. The Memorial Day celebration here is like a Norman Rockwell painting. Oh. We lay a wreath at that World War I Memorial Arch in Blaney Plaza, and it's just this wonderful community still. So you still have the small town feeling. It's a fun place to be for the weekend because you went to Winchester Mystery House, but you're here, mm-hmm. you know, in Saratoga. You can pop from here up to Castle Rock and do rock climbing. There's an archery range not even half a mile from Cooper Garrett. That's one of the county parks. There are so many things you can do. It's a really neat town. The Mountain Winery has a famous concert series, Villa Montalvo. The Montalvo Art Center not only has art displays, they also have a concert series that happens up there, and theater productions that are ongoing through the winter months right now, in addition to concerts. You know, so there's so much that goes on.
It's funny listening to you talk. You'd think you were working for the Chamber of Commerce.
No.
But when I know
I just
the story
love living
that
here.
When I know the story that you were a world traveler and you lived in all these places around the world.
Yeah.
It sounds like you grew up here. It's like, oh yeah, she loves it because she grew up here. But no, you were all over the place.
And I didn't grow up here.
Yes, Doris Cooper speaks highly of the Saratoga community and is very sincere. Learn more about Cooper Garrett Vineyards and Garrett Farms at cgv.com for Cooper Garrett Vineyards. And if you'd like to learn more about the community and village, visit saratoga.ca.us. We thank Bill and Doris for being gracious hosts. After going back to the Saratoga Oaks Lodge for a little while, we went out to dinner to Hero Ranch Kitchen, which again was just across the street, and what a wonderful dinner that was.
It really was. This is apparently one of the hottest restaurants in Saratoga right now, and for very, very good reason.
They're also well known for the brand Opa, which they have about 6 locations around the Bay Area. There were some really nice choices, but I ended up going with the apricot, garlic, and ginger glazed pork chop that was just delicious. It was perfect. A lot of flavor. It doesn't sound like those two would mix very well, apricot and and a ginger glaze, but it was fantastic, and the meat was just perfect. And you had a really nice dinner.
It was a black truffle Wagyu steak from Snake River Farms. Aside from the fact that I'm a very big truffle fan, I absolutely adore truffles, and they are very expensive, so there was just a little bit of that on there, and Wagyu beef is a very expensive cut of beef as well. Mm. And it was just so tender, melt in your mouth, beautiful flavor of the truffles, and it went great with the Jordan Cabernet that we drank as well.
That's right. We had a really nice wine. Sarah, the host, was quite hospitable, and the two guys behind the bar were a lot of fun.
They were a lot of fun, and they were great mixologists. I had a wonderful cocktail there as well.
Yes, yes. If you find yourself in the area and you want a fabulous dinner, visit theheroranchkitchen.com. And our next visit on Monday morning was to Ridge Montebello Vineyards. It's a winding, albeit enjoyable, ride up into the Santa Cruz Mountains. Ridge's Lytton Springs Winery is up in Dry Creek Valley, near where we live, but I've always wanted to visit the historic Montebello. Natalie was our wine educator.
I really appreciated, too, the fact that they took us first out on the tour. Of course, they gave us a Chardonnay to start out with. They took us out to look at the view. They took us into the vineyards. They told us a lot about what they do specifically there at Ridge and their vineyard management practices.
Well, that's a good intro, because here is Natalie when she took us out to the peak there next to the old gnarly Cabernet vines.
They are not on a trellis like the rest of the vines that you see behind you. The trellis system has not been developed yet. There's also no irrigation system, which is why they are all so spread out, so that they're not having to fight over any groundwater. With these older vines, the roots are 15, 20 feet deep in the ground. The gentleman from Stanford, they purchased this property just as a way to kind of escape city life. They would come up on the weekends and hang out with friends and family. These vines were here, so they decided to play around, and they produced half a barrel of cab, which they forgot about, I believe, for about a year and a half, 2 years. Went back to it and realized that they had something really special here, and Ridge was bonded in 1962.
So they had no idea they were going to do winemaking, huh?
No. They were engineers.
Interesting.
We then went indoors for a sit-down tasting. There were 10 other people with us. And here's a little bit of Natalie presenting that very enjoyable tasting.
So 2015 Montebello Bordeaux blend. All of the fruit is grown here on the mountain, mostly Cabernet Sauvignon with Merlot, Petit Verdot, and Cabernet Franc. This is a wine that Ridge has been producing since the beginning, 1962. Started out as 100% Cabernet, and it's kind of evolved over the years. We also produce an estate cab, which is also a Bordeaux blend coming from the mountain. All of the parcels on the mountain can pretty much be split in half, and the fruit that's producing a wine that is more approachable now is what's going into that estate cab. And the fruit that's producing a wine that really needs time to fully develop is what's going into this Montebello. This is a wine that we highly recommend laying down 15 to 30 years. So it is a wine that does require patience.
You hear those gasps about the idea of cellaring or laying down the Ridge Montebello for 15 to 30 years. If that was said in France, no one would find that unusual. Speaking of France, Natalie shared the details of how the 1971 Ridge did in the Paris tasting of 1976, the Judgment of Paris. They came in fifth place among the French wines and the American Cabernets, but in a subsequent reenactment tasting in 2006, with the original vintages, both the French and California wines, Ridge came in first place. Then, in a more recent judgment with current vintages, the 2012 Ridge Montebello again took first place. This is why Ridge Vineyard's Montebello is often referred to as iconic. I thank the team at Ridge for hosting us. It was a wonderful tasting.
If you're like us, that 200 and some odd dollar bottles of wine is not in your everyday budget, it's always fun to go to a place like Ridge that you at least get to taste it and see what all the fuss is about.
Excellent comment. Yes, absolutely. But don't let that comment scare you. They do have some wines in the $30 range and up. There are so many more things we could say about our 3 days in the Saratoga area, but I've quickly run out of time. But I think you get the point. Do yourself a favor some weekend and visit the Saratoga and surrounding communities. I'm confident you will have a great time. A quick heartfelt thank you again to Paul Hernandez at Saratoga Oaks Lodge, Shozo at the Hikone Estate and Japanese Gardens, Francis Wong at Visit San Jose, Sino Japanese Restaurant, Bill and Doris of Cooper Garrett Estate Vineyards and Garrett Farms, Sarah and the crew at Hero Ranch Kitchen, and Natalie, Lauren, and Kate at Ridge Vineyards. I also want to add that we enjoyed a tasting at the Cinnabar Tasting Room in Saratoga and Savannah Chanel up in the Saratoga Hills. And Gene Sullivan, thank you for putting this all together. Well, that brings our venture to a close. Thank you, Meredith, for joining me today.
Thank you, honey. We sure had a great time.
Indeed. And I hope you, out there listening in podcast land, enjoyed it as well. If you're listening to this on iTunes, Stitcher, or another podcast provider, you can find more interviews and interesting content on my website, onthewineroad.com. I'm on Facebook as On the Wine Road, and Instagram and Twitter at JD Wine Road. Thank you for your continued support and keeping me company on the Wine Road.